Heary, 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 the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. In our first case, 2023-0733, in the matter of Kenneth Adams versus Patricia Harris, Tax Commissioner of Ohio. On behalf of the appellants, Mr. Van Clee. Good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. The entire basis of the decision from the Board of Tax Appeals in this case was its statement that the Agricultural Advisory Committee recommended a woodland clearing cost of $1,000 per acre. However, the committee actually did not make that recommendation. In fact, it recommended that $1,000 was not enough. In fact, there's not a single fact in the record that supports a woodland clearing cost of $1,000 per acre. The lowest cost for clearing an acre of land provided in the record was $2,930. And the costs went up from there up to $8,150. That was the range of woodland clearing costs that the department deemed were credible enough to consider, that is, they were based on actual receipts of land that was cleared.
So although the tax commissioner came up with an amount that was quite a bit less, was it an unreasonable amount?
Yes, Your Honor. Precisely because it was so much less. I mean, the lowest amount of woodland clearing costs that was in the record was almost three times the amount that the commissioner used for its woodland clearing costs, and there was no basis for it whatsoever.
Would $1,500 have been too low?
Yes, Your Honor. At least you would think if the woodland clearing cost in the formula was to be accurate, it would at least have to be the minimum amount that you could clear an acre of forest for.
And the amount for clearing cost before that was 500?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that the amount should have gone from 500 to a minimum of 2,000 or 2,600?
Yes, Your Honor. One thing that needs to be considered is that this $500 woodland clearing cost that had been in the formula was extremely outdated. It had been in place for more than a decade, if I recall correctly. It was so far overdue for a change, for an update, that that's why the amount of the clearing deduction really had to be drastically increased from $500.
Was it the commissioner's responsibility to make that update all at one, in one fell swoop at one time?
What it should have done was to update it long before it did. But once it decided to finally getting around to updating it, it was responsible for making sure that it was an accurate amount based on the facts that were adduced by the commissioner at the time.
And your position is there's no credible evidence to support the reasoning for the $1,000?
There's none, Your Honor. Not a single fact. And in fact, there was one statement made in the record that a drainage contractor, not a woodland clearing contractor, but a drainage contractor had said that it heard that maybe $800 to $1,000 an acre was a going price in one of its projects, but even the commissioner's own witnesses admitted in the hearing that this was not a credible number and it could not be the basis for the woodland clearing cost being selected by the commissioner. Other than that, there's nothing in the record that even mentions 1,000 other than a pick it out of the air number that the commissioner came up with based on no evidence whatsoever.
So assume if we agree with you, then what do we do? Do we send it back for the tax commissioner to select a new rate based on the existing evidence in the record, or can the tax commissioner hear new evidence?
It could be either way, Your Honor. Our position is to send it back to the Board of Tax Appeals and have them send it back with directions to the commissioner to either come up with additional evidence or use the evidence that it already has. Either would be acceptable to us. And I think that the commissioner would have some discretion upon remand to decide whether the evidence that they have is enough or whether they needed additional evidence.
Well, the commissioner would only have discretion if we gave the commissioner discretion.
Yes, sir. And our position is that the commissioner should have the discretion with a direction from the court to actually do a study, either by looking at additional evidence or using the evidence that it already has. But we're not seeking to tie the commissioner's hands on whether to obtain additional evidence or not.
Could the Board of Tax Appeals come up with an amount? Does the law permit that?
The law does permit that. It's not what we're requesting, because we think the commissioner has better tools to obtain that information than the BTA.
And for any information more than what's already been put forth?
Yes, Your Honor. And the commissioner could base the decision on what's already in the record, if the commissioner so chooses. But we would not object to the commissioner looking for additional evidence.
What is the, is there a regular process for reviewing this rate, or does it come out of the Agricultural Advisory Committee, or how does the tax commissioner actually take this up? Or is it every time the rules need to be revised?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor. The commissioner is required by law to update the tables every single year. And so and that usually occurs in the summer of the year. So that process entails meeting with the Agricultural Advisory Committee to obtain information, as well as doing any additional research that the commissioner chooses to do. And that's all done on an annual basis. These tables are all revised every single year.
Or else they're just, they remain, it sounds to me like they remain the same for quite a few years.
They have for the woodland clearing cost, and improperly so, because they're supposed to be updated with new information every year. And in fact, it does. The commissioner does that for all of the other factors put in the formula. For example, grain prices and the costs of raising the grain. That is updated with the assistance of the committee every single year.
Thank you.
Your Honor, if I would like to reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Kim.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, fellow justices. If I may, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for my cross-appeal rebuttal, if I may.
Absolutely.
may it please the court, obviously we've got substantive issues and jurisdictional issues to talk about. I wanted to take a minute to start by starting it at the end of all this, and then go back. Because this is ultimately a wide-reaching case that has the potential to affect not only the individual appellants and not only all CAUV landowners, but really, in fact, all landowners and real property owners in the state. And so if we were to put aside for a moment whether the tax commissioner acted within her discretion, which the BTA correctly determined, or the substantial jurisdictional considerations that we submit that the BTA incorrectly determined or considered, you have serious questions and, frankly, chaos. I hesitate a little bit, if only because I don't want to oversell that. But it would be, frankly, chaos that would ensue if this court were to determine that the tax commissioner abused her discretion and therefore were to remand this matter for some additional action here.
Why chaos,
and,
Mr. Gant?
And the reason for that, and I can get there because I know that you guys are going to chomp at that. The tax commissioner is constitutionally bound whenever they're dealing with whenever you're dealing with real property taxation, to set tax rates uniformly by rule. You're talking about local monies here that the tax commissioner never sees, never assesses, never collects. But any amendment to a CAUV table, these CAUV journal entries that were issued. They're as final determinations, as this court has said, they are not individual valuations directed to individual taxpayers. That journal entry deals with the operation of the table that is used uniformly for every taxpayer. And so, if that table gets amended, then even putting aside the question of do you then just amend that for the 38th sum appellants in this case? Do you amend it for all the CAUV landowners? What have you? The result is that table would need to be recalculated and amended, and then that would then need to be reapplied to all the landowners, all the CAUV landowners.
So why is that chaos, Mr. King, over here? Why is that chaos?
Well, for multiple reasons. One is that when you're talking about real property taxation, there's a fixed number. It's a zero-sum game. So if taxes go down for some taxpayers, and they were to be entitled to refunds, then other taxpayers would have to get new assessments or additional assessments. We're talking about potentially, and I don't want to, it's not necessarily the case that every single taxpayer will be involved, but potentially a whole host, if not most of the taxpayers, would end up having to be reassessed or get refunds.
Counsel, your opponent on the other side described the $1,000 figure that kind of remained static all these years as something that was just pulled out of the air. Do you disagree with that?
It was not pulled out of the air, Your Honor.
How did the commissioner arrive at that?
Well, so it's important to recognize that with the CAUV table exercise, the calculation and the preparation of that table, the woodland cost is one of hundreds or thousands of inputs into that table, and everything flows into a set of numbers. And again, like I said before, it's uniform application for everybody, but it's an exercise in appraisal. We all can think about appraisal in terms of real estate and houses and so on and so forth. When you do appraisals for houses, you look at comparables, nearby houses, similar sized houses, whatever, but you don't look at what was being offered. You look at actual costs, and quite frankly, notwithstanding what Mr. Van Clay said here, most of the data, the information that was brought forth, the tax commissioner was estimates it was not actual cost information.
So what did the commissioner go by to come to the 1,000?
Well, I'm taking a little while, unfortunately, but I'm getting there, Your Honor, and that is that. Because as I stated in the briefs, there are plenty of flaws that the BTA noticed. One was that these were interested parties, so there was some implicit bias in the presentation of this data. There was a failure to consider economies of scale when you're dealing with, if you're dealing with forests of different sizes, the clearing costs could be different. There's a failure to account for, cost of doing business in Cleveland or of clearing woodland in Cleveland could be different from Cincinnati or Youngstown.
How much agricultural land is there in Cleveland?
I'm just using examples of the point is that there was the requirement here is to come up with a representative cost figure state. And so if you only look at one portion of the state, that's something that the commissioner and the advisory committee just determined that is not something that can be representative for the entire state.
But you came up with one number for the entire state, so that doesn't seem a very helpful argument.
I'm sorry?
The number that Olmley came up with was one number, right? You didn't have different numbers for different parts of the state, so how does that help your argument?
Where the information that was provided by various taxpayers and other sources, what that demonstrated was, and there's no one is disputing this, is that the current number was too low, and so it needed to be increased.
So the question is how much. So I guess here's what I don't understand about your argument. Your argument is, well, there's flaws in the information that they presented, which may be true, but how does that get you to, well, so because there's flaws in the information we have, we'll just pick a number out of thin air.
Well, it's not it's not a number out of thin air
you doubled the current number, other than that, there seems to be no logic to it.
Well, but it is a significant increase from the existing number, and it was a good faith adjustment to the already existing figure and input.
So let me stop you there.
What was it based on?
It was based on the fact that there was an adjustment was warranted, but frankly, in the absence of credible numbers to be able to say, well, is it going to be 3,000? Is it going to be 2,000? I mean,
isn't that the tax commissioner's job, is to get the information he needs to make the
yes, it is.
But he's trusted to do it,
and they asked for it,
and they got it. But you're saying it wasn't credible.
Well, they got what they got. And when the committee looked at it, the tax commissioner looked at it, there was a determination and a recommendation that.
Well, wait a minute.
That you discard it.
Although it wasn't discarded, Your Honor. It was used to confirm that, hey, the number should be adjusted. But then because there was.
But the number needed to be adjusted because for many years it was at 500. Correct.
There's no dispute that it was at 500. So
if this is creating chaos, the chaos was created by the tax commissioner not changing that number for many years.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, that number had not been. We're only dealing with where we are now.
If that number wasn't changed for many years and it was all just doubled for whatever reason, if there's a problem with it, it's the tax commissioner who's causing the chaos by not adjusting the $500 number for many years. So you're accusing us of creating chaos or of your opponent? I think the chaos is coming from the tax commissioner.
I'm certainly not accusing the court, and I'm not accusing the appellants of anything. I'm simply saying that from where the tax commissioner stood and the advisory committee stood, they recognized that an adjustment was necessary.
So why isn't this number, Mr. Kim, why isn't this number then arbitrary?
Well, if you think about it, again, if you get back to the notion of appraisals and in the real estate context, it's as much as an art as a science. There is, if you have 100 appraisers, you're going to have potentially 100.
But do you
values.
Have that's so, true? But do you have any that's around the $1,000 number? The numbers that were presented to the tax commissioner range from 2,600 to 4,000.
So one thing I haven't mentioned, Your Honor, is the fact of even if we could say with certainty that the representative value for the woodland clearing costs across the entire state, let's just say it doesn't matter what it is, it's X. That's still not what the deduction for purposes of the table is going to be. There is an implicit assumption in the table, the way that the table operates, that the landowners get that benefit every year. Whether or not they've cleared the cost, whether or not they've actually cleared woodland, and whether or not they did in the past or they're not going to do it in the future.
So I want to make sure I understand the record in front of me, just to make sure that what I have written down is accurate. One of the committee members is the Ohio Forestry Association, and the gentleman in charge of the Ohio Forestry Association advised the tax commissioner that the proper clear cost rate is between $2,200 to $4,500, an average of $3,350. After surveying members that provide clearing service costs or clearing services, that was their cost. That's in the record.
Okay.
So that's in front of the tax commissioner. And then even though that span, and the average is before the tax commissioner. The tax commissioner just randomly selects $1,000, which isn't even from the advisory committee. So to Justice Stewart's point, how is that not arbitrary when the Ohio Forestry Association is providing these costs after being advised by members in the industry? How is that not arbitrary?
Because it is based off of the totality of evidence that was before the committee and before the commissioner.
So where is the evidence that someone said clearing cost is $1,000? Because everything I see in the record, I don't see an estimate for that. Well, so maybe I missed it.
Yes, no one is suggesting that.
Yes, I missed it. It's in the record, or it's not in the record.
No one is suggesting that the $1,000 someone said as here's a receipt that says $1,000 per acre. That's
so that evidence is not in front of the tax commissioner whatsoever.
But that's not the basis for the adjustment that was made.
If it's $3,000, as the chief says, did somebody testify or say that it's really about a third of that? So that you could somehow calculate $1,000. I couldn't find anything, but.
I mean, to your specific question, no, Your Honor.
Well, then how, all we're asking, how they get to $1,000?
We're talking in an appraisal context when you've got all these, if you've got various data points out there.
And what data points would lead one to do $1,000?
Well, if I may, Your Honor, the data points, if you have determined that none of those data points is particularly reliable and there's no way to be able to ascertain which one of those is the correct one, then you've got a couple choices there. You could say Mr. Van Clay has stated at some point in the proceedings or in the briefs, well, take an average. You could say, well, pick the highest one or pick the lowest one. You could say, don't do any change at all. Quite frankly, if the logic, the way the logic is set up, the tax commissioner arguably might have been fully justified in saying we can't pick a number, so we will leave it unchanged. But the tax commissioner recognized and the committee recognized that wasn't fair either, because they acknowledged, based on this information, that an increase was warranted.
What was the 30% ratio of cropland value to USDA market value? Is there some kind of formula where we could actually quantify that?
I think that at some point was a potential proposal or just an idea that was floated that did not flow through at the end.
I'm looking and it's there was a proposal that the clearing cost rate be set at $3,350, but then it was reduced to $1,000. Quote, based on a 30% ratio of cropland value to USDA market value.
Yeah, I think there are multiple iterations of something to that effect, and to your point, Your Honor, but the short answer is that was not adopted.
Okay, so one last question. I think early in the questioning to your colleague on the other side, Justice Stewart had said going from $500 to maybe $3,350 was a big jump. So is it within the discretion of the tax commissioner to do something incrementally, whether she expressed it or not? Because I'm saying, you know, you're hearing a lot of arbitrary, but is an arbitrary incremental increase unreasonable?
One, I would say no. Two, I would say that the tax commissioner would be, again, this is all about gathering information, gathering what the committee and the department and the commissioner feels is justifiable, credible, corroborative evidence. So if they see something that comes along, then yes, it will. Then they can increase it further down the road. But in the meantime, this is. What they could justify in the meantime, and they unfortunately didn't have a better ability to point to any other number. So this was a good faith recognition of, hey, we need to adjust this number.
So why do you call this a zero sum game?
Well, because if you, anytime tax exemptions are applied, because this is ultimately a tax exemption because it's a reduction in real property tax for certain taxpayers, exemptions are it's a derogation of the responsibility for taxation, and so necessarily if taxes are reduced for one, real property, we're talking real property taxes.
But it's not dollar for dollar reduced, correct?
But ultimately, at some point, there is a dollar amount associated with these calculations. So if that number gets at the end of the day gets reduced for one person, then it's going to have to be increased for somebody else.
If we accepted that logic, we just wouldn't hear tax cases, because every tax case where someone's taxes is reduced, theoretically, the government has less money and it could raise taxes for other people. But I mean, the logic can't be that, well, the tax commissioner didn't follow the law, but there's nothing the courts can do about it because otherwise it would cause chaos. I mean, that can't be your argument, can it?
No, respectfully, Your Honor, we're talking about a very specific tax here, a very specific arm of taxes here. We're talking about real property taxation, which it's not just by statute. It's in the Constitution. It needs to be applied uniformly by rule across all taxpayers.
We handle real property tax cases all the time.
Right, but then it also, and I just simplified the constitutional provision, it's Article 12, Section 2. There's also provision in there that says that, hey, exceptions to this, or if you have an exemption for public worship house or for a school or other things like that. So there are provisions in there for some of the cases that you're probably contemplating in your head right now. But as to real property taxation generally, if we're talking about, there's nothing in there that says that, oh, well, we can adjust for some people for CAUV taxes, related taxes, but not others. What you'd end up having here is you'd end up having a CAUV table that's recalculated and amended, but then for the same given year, you'd have two different tables.
Why? Well, why wouldn't the tax commission apply it to everybody?
Well, they could, but then that would the result is that you'd end up with a bunch of people getting potentially getting new bills, a bunch of people getting refunds. What would you do if somebody had moved since 2015 or somebody had died since 2015? I mean, there's a whole host of questions and Pandora's box issues that would result in this. And I'm just wanting to alert the court to that's what we're talking about here. We're also talking about local monies. Auditors, you know, would probably want to have a say in all this.
Seem to be a reason that, you know, we don't have to follow the law, right?
Well, but what that goes to, one, is that it goes to the discretion that's afforded the tax commissioner here in the department, and two, it actually, and I see my time has long expired, but it goes to the jurisdictional questions that we as the department raised, because it goes to the standing, it goes to the injury that has been alleged. You know, notably, the appellants, even Mr. Van Clay, when he stood up here before, he did not. He said, "Oh, we're fine with this. We're fine with that." Whether they don't specifically say, "Oh, well, we want refunds," they say, "Oh, well, we want the tax commissioner to recalculate or amend the CAUV tables." There are a whole host of logistic and administrative problems and concerns that arise with any of those scenarios. It's all laid out in my briefs, and so I won't belabor them all here.
Thank you. Mr. Van Clee, you have 6 minutes, 52 seconds remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Van Clee, the CAUV is current agricultural use value. So if you get taxed every year, it's current every year. So if you don't cut down your woods on certain number of acres of your farm, you're going to take that every year, because the current value means you can't use that land for agriculture because you'd have to cut down the trees, right? Isn't that how that works?
Kind of, Your Honor. When the tax commissioner came up with the formula,
I'm going back to the Constitution, because all the tax commissioner is doing is carrying out whatever legislation was enacted after this was adopted in 1974 by the people of Ohio. Hmm. So I don't think it matters that they can take this CAUV every year. They don't cut down their woods, do you? Because it says current.
Yeah, it's current. The formula assumes, for purposes of coming up with a fair value for woodland, that the cost for clearing will be incurred every year. It's the way it's always been done by the commissioner, and it's done that way for drainage costs as well.
Because that amount is not determined every year, because it's when the county auditor actually does the assessment, looks at the chart, takes that into account into coming up with an estimated value of the land for taxation purposes, correct?
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure we understood how this was all being used.
Yeah, the woodland clearing cost is subtracted in this formula from the value every year in order to come up with a fair value that is then uniformly applied across the state. And even though no clearing actually occurs of the woodlands.
And so Mr. Kim's argument about this would mean that he was saying it would not have equal impact around the state, except if you're in a city and you're not on agricultural land, this section of the revised code doesn't even apply to you, correct?
It does not.
And that's because the Ohio Constitution was amended by Ohio voters, at least the majority of them, who thought that agriculture was important, correct?
Right.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, the question before the court here today has an impact only on woodlands, because that is part of the formula for determining woodland value. It would not affect the value of somebody who does not have woodlands. And frankly, I don't see where the chaos is going to develop here. Once the commissioner comes up with a fair value for the clearing cost, it's plugged into the formula, and a computer spits out the value of every soil type in the state. It's really not a very complicated process once you come up with your woodland clearing value. And when it comes right down to it, although this question is critical for the preservation of very valuable woodlands, it doesn't affect that many taxpayers, because many of the woodlands are already at minimum value, so the woodland clearing cost does not affect them. But for those owners who have valuable woodlands, that is very fertile ground hosting trees, those are the woodlands that are most susceptible to being torn down to make farmland out of them. And even though the number of taxpayers who are impacted is not great, and therefore the counter impact on non-woodland owners is not great, it's very important for those woodland owners who have fertile ground. And it's extremely important for the environment, because those are the woodlands that are most valuable for the environment. Now, if the commissioner doesn't like the numbers that the Agricultural Committee gave to the commissioner, then the regulation, that is the commissioner's own regulation, requires the commissioner to find the information. It has an affirmative research requirement in OAC 5703-25-33 to do that, as explained in our proposition of law number 2. So if the commissioner thinks that there are flaws in the range of 2900 to 8500 that were provided to the commissioner is free to find information that the commissioner is comfortable with, and it has a duty to do so. I wanted to mention one argument that is in the fourth brief, which we, of course, then could not respond to because there was no fifth brief, concerning issue preclusion or issue exhaustion, which is the term used for the doctrine that in certain cases a person must comment on a preliminary draft of an action by the commissioner in order to have standing to appeal it. In the fourth brief, the commissioner cited two cases, CNG and American Fiber, for the proposition that the law requires a person who is interested in woodland clearing costs or the CAUV formula to comment in advance of the commissioner adopting that formula. But in those two cases, there was an affirmative duty provided by statute for a taxpayer to submit those comments in the context of sales and use tax reassessments. That is not the case here. There's no statutory requirement for a taxpayer to submit comments. And in fact, it would be unfair for that requirement to be imposed because the tax commissioner doesn't provide public notice of an opportunity to submit comments. And therefore, the taxpayers have no idea that they are required to submit comments before the tax commissioner comes up with a final value.
Are your clients seeking refunds in this action?
Currently, there is no plan to do so. Theoretically, it could be. However, I think the practicality of trying to get refunds is that they would spend more in attorney's costs to get the refunds than they would get in the refunds. So practically speaking, I would say there's very little chance of that happening. Well, if there are no additional questions, I think I'll sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Kim, you've exceeded your time, but I'll give you 30 seconds to wrap up.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to go ahead and respond to one point that Mr. Van Clay made, and that is regarding this notion of exhaustion. The reason why it's not exhaustion that we're talking about here. We're talking about the tax commissioner's statutory jurisdiction to deal with to issue final determinations, and it's limited to the arguments and the grievances that are presented to it. And so it's not simply a matter of you didn't show up at the hearing, therefore you can't proceed, or you didn't provide anything. It is a final determination, the way that it works, and it can't just be applied for some and not others. It is. The tax commissioner is going to render a final determination addressing the grievances or issues that get raised by the taxpayers. If they don't raise anything or any concerns, then there's nothing that the tax commissioner is statutorily authorized to issue in an FD. That's the requirement that we're talking about in that with respect to that proposition of law with that jurisdictional issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You will receive a decision from the court.